My palms are sweating.
Why?
Because I've put effort in this time.
Oh, okay.
And that means that I can fail.
Not a Disney Movie is an exploration of animated movies not made by Disney. It contains explicit language.
Welcome to this week's episode of Not a Disney Movie. This week we watched
Over the Hedge from 2006.
Over the Hedge from 2006, which is a DreamWorks film, I believe.
Yep.
We didn't
check this one before we watched it to check it wasn't
Disney. Oh, it's definitely not a Disney movie. I feel like of the movies we've watched so far, this one is trying its hardest to be a Disney movie.
Oh, interesting. That's not what I thought you would say.
Well, those are my thoughts so far. So, just high-level summary of this movie. This movie is about a raccoon who steals a bunch of food from a bear, wakes the bear up early from hibernation. The bear threatens to kill him, and he has a week to recover the amount of food that he's stolen. So I wrote down themes, because I know I'm bad at themes. I wrote down greed, ? So... Is this film about greed?
It's always good to write down your ideas of what the themes are before you watch the movie.
So then this raccoon happens across a bunch of other hibernating animals who for some reason got up a week earlier than the bear, even though they're all meant to be hibernating. So he then uses them to help steal all these bunch of junk food to then give to the bear. And hilarity ensues. That's basically the film. And then I wrote down, towards the end of the film, I wrote down another theme. I wrote family.
Family. Yeah.
Yeah. The only other thing I really know about this movie is that, it had Avril Lavigne in it, which is the only real memory I have of this movie coming out at the time was that it had Avril Lavigne in it. I thought, that's very strange. Why is she in this movie? She is a female possum. Her father, Possum, is played by William Shatner. The cast in this is bonkers. Yeah. Like, you've got Bruce Willis. I wrote down, like, is that Bruce Willis? Is Bruce Willis a raccoon? And then it's like, oh yeah, Bruce Willis is a raccoon. So Bruce Willis is the raccoon. He's like the kind of... There's a very, I would say, Woody and Buzz dynamic to... RJ, who's the raccoon, voiced by Bruce Willis, and the tortoise, who is voiced by some guy whose name I forget.
Yeah, I think it was one of his last movies. I didn't write down his name either, because it wasn't one that I recognised.
He's been in lots of stuff. You would, like, recognise him. He's an older gentleman.
But can I tell you something? By my scheduling, we were supposed to talk about it at the end of the podcast.
Oh, okay.
But you brought it up now.
Okay.
But the connection just... Or not connection, the comparison with Toy Story also occurred to me for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, I was thinking about how in Toy Story, the creatures, that is the toys, are always, the fact that they can come to life and talk and stuff is always hidden from the humans. So, like, they have this whole story going on that's wild and crazy and there's lots of wacky adventures. Yeah. But the humans never
see that.
Witness it.
Yeah.
And, like, that's part of, I think, what makes Toy Story so magical, because then you have this whole generation of children who grew up, like, trying to...
Yeah, it's like a childhood fantasy, isn't it?
Yeah, trying to catch their toys moving.
Yeah, yeah.
Every time they left the room and never being quite fast enough. And then that lives in your imagination and creates this entire magical thing.
Mm-hmm.
This movie is different. Is because the animals interacted with the humans, and at one point they have like some sort of gas tank that is like flying through the neighborhood and smashing through all of the garden fences.
That is one of the best sequences. I wrote that down. There's a big like chase sort of sequence where the raccoon RJ and the tortoise, whose name I've forgotten, we'll have to look it up.
Vern.
They sort of reconcile, and they decide, or they f- figure they can steal a week's worth of... No, that's not what it was, is it? No, I don't know.
Well, the point, the reason I brought that up...
There's a great chase sequence, is my point. And
but here's the thing. There's no way that the humans in that scenario didn't notice that.
No.
And therefore, it breaks the sort of law.
Well, there's a sequence earlier than that, though, isn't there? Where
There's other things. There's things throughout the movie that I just think... where the animals interact with the humans in a way that's not realistic. And, like, clearly it's not supposed to be realistic, and neither is Toy Story. But, like, Toy Story does a really clever thing where it sets up a universe in which this could be real, and this movie does not do that.
Right, okay, yeah, I see what you're saying. There's kind of, like, a suspension of disbelief with Toy Story that makes you feel like this still could be a reality in which this exists, like, because the toys don't directly interact with humans ever.
Apart from Sid.
Well, they do kind of a bit, I feel. Yeah, they do scare Sid, don't they?
Yeah, but even then they put on, like, they're using their toy voices, you know what I mean? Like, he doesn't...
Yeah, he doesn't hear them speak sort of thing or anything, yeah.
Anyway, that was my observation on why I don't think this could be a Disney movie.
Okay. Do you want to roll back to what you had lined up?
Okay, so, Paul.
Yes.
Got sweaty pants.
Okay.
Why do you think I chose this movie?
Because it had Avril Lavigne in it. I like Avril Lavigne.
You think I chose this movie because you like Avril Lavigne?
Sure.
Right, well, that's not why. I initially was going to... I was deciding between two other films. And then I went on BBC News and I discovered... someone, a weather watcher on BBC, had taken a picture of an astrological phenomena which is named, arguably, after Steve Carell as a result of this movie.
That's so tangential. Also, your hair flick doesn't translate to a podcast.
That wasn't for effect. That was because my hair was annoying me.
Shall I explain to you? What, the Steve Carell link?
Yeah.
Go on then.
Steve Carell, as we know, plays...
The squirrel.
The squirrel.
Hammy.
Hammy the hamster, who is a squirrel.
I don't think they call him Hammy the hamster.
No, they don't, but... What else could Hammy be short for?
Well, yeah, good point.
In the movie, as you will recall, there is a hedge.
Yes.
They discover it early on, and they don't know what it is. And one of the characters, I think probably Steve Carell's character, Hammy the hamster...
Hammy zips up and down it and goes, it goes on forever.
And they say, what shall we call it? And he says, Steve.
Yes.
Because Steve is a nice name. And in the IMDb trivia page, which is where I get all my information, they point out that this could be, this is the arguable part, this could be because
the actor is
Steve Carell.
Yeah.
And, like, maybe that was just a wee nod to him.
Yeah.
That is the only part of the story that is not, like, based in fact. There is, however, a piece of ribbon in the sky.
Right.
An astrological phenomena that is related to the Aurora Borealis. You know how the Aurora Borealis...
We're talking about in real life now.
In real life.
Okay, yeah, sure.
The Aurora Borealis is like usually like a, like the big and round and these waves, but there's this weird little part of it that was just discovered, I think, in, like, the 70s.
Uh-huh.
And it has been named Steve.
Uh-huh.
The reason it's been named Steve is because of this movie.
What?
Yeah.
So, because it goes on forever?
No, because they don't know what it is. They're like, well, what should we call it?
Oh,
we'll
call
it Steve.
Wow, whoever named that. But you said it was named that in the 70s. It was found in the 70s.
It was seen in the 70s, but it wasn't... It wasn't, like,
it wasn't named until at least 2006,
yeah.
What the hell?
And I would like it to be known also, I took some notes about this because I thought you'd have questions. You don't seem to have any at the moment. But
I just find that very strange. Like, that person clearly was, like, must have been a massive fan of Over the Hedge, which feels like to be strange in itself.
I think it started off as a nickname amongst sort of amateur sky watchers.
Right, okay.
But then it got taken on by, like, scientists.
Uh-huh.
And they... adapted the name
Steve. When you say adapted, do you mean adopted?
No, I mean adapted.
Okay.
I mean the it's what's called a backronym, which was when there's a word that you make into an acronym on the basis of already having a word.
Okay.
So like
everything in Marvel.
Probably.
Like sword, shield.
I think that sounds likely because they changed Steve to strong thermal emission velocity enhancement.
Wow.
What
does Steve look like then? A long blue ribbon.
A long bluey green ribbon.
That's from part space. Of the Aurora Borealis, but separate?
Well, they just say that it's similar to the Aurora Borealis.
Right,
but
where
it's
can
like,
you see it from then?
Well, the reason it was in the news is because it was most recently spotted above Shetland.
Oh, okay.
And the quote from BBC that I copied was, "As Steve is unpredictable and only lasts for a short time, recurring occurrences from the ground are rare." So BBC Weather Watch viewer Kev B had a real treat. You got a really good picture. You should go to the BBC website and look
up. Check out Kev B's picture.
Kev B's picture.
All right.
Steve.
Well, I won't be doing that. But
so that is the only reason we watched this movie.
That's the only reason it will have. That is, you made some good leaps there. Good leaps in logic to get to there. Well, I suppose not logic, but like, how far down the rabbit hole do you have to go to find that? Was that all in that BBC article?
Yeah.
About the name of this thing coming from the movie Over the Edge? That's bonkers.
They couldn't just refer to the astrological phenomena as Steve without explaining.
Sure. I guess. It doesn't exactly sound spacey enough, does it?
I would say, just as a side note,
Steve Carell does the best job in this movie in terms of voice acting. Like, he's not just using his regular voice, a la Bruce Willis.
Him and I think also arguably Eugene Levy and Catherine O'Hara.
Eugene was the very heavy Minnesota accent.
There's like an attempt to play an actual character as opposed to just saying the lines in your voice.
I feel like Eugene Levy and Catherine O'Hara are very underutilized in that movie, given that we're such fans of Schitt's Creek as well. And like,
I do love them.
Knowing what great work they can do together, and then that they're just kind of, they're given a few jokes, but arguably they've got like, they're porcupines, and they've got three porcupine kids, and the porcupine kids arguably are like a bit more funny. They've got like the comedy moments.
In our last podcast, we talked a little bit about how there was a move away from using voice actors who were trained in voice and only, you know, or their specialism is in voice acting, to using mainstream stars. With the implication being that the quality of the voice acting was less good because they were just using like average stars.
Yeah, they're just using stars for their star power as opposed to like their ability to play an animal.
Which I think is true. I think it's true for the main part. However, I did again read on the IMDb trivia page that Nick Nolte, who plays the bear, he studied bears to do a voice that sounded bear-like. And knowing that did increase my enjoyment of his bear voice, like, a lot. I think if you were to go back and watch it again and listen to his voice, he sounds like a bear.
I'll say so.
You might need to take my word on it. But
yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say any of them sound particularly animalistic, maybe other than the bear. But yeah. What's next on your list?
I made a list of other movies that came out in 2006 for comparison purposes.
Always good to know.
So there was The Wild, which I don't really remember.
No, I don't remember that.
I think we'll have to add that to the list. Yeah. Flushed Away, which came out just after it.
Flushed Away, that's an Aardman movie. CGI,
Cars.
Cars, one of Pixar's biggest movies. Also one of their worst.
Also gave me an existential crisis.
About Cars.
About where are the humans? They're living in a universe of cars.
Yeah.
Where are they?
It's like, don't worry about it.
Oh, I worried. Open Season.
Open Season. That sounds like a bad movie, yeah.
Ice Age.
Ice Age. Ugh.
You don't like Ice Age?
I mean, the first one is fine, but the fact that they just kept making sequels really kind of killed it for me.
Yeah,
and the fact that they just got progressively worse and worse.
And finally, the one I made a note of was Happy Feet.
Happy Feet. Oscar winning, I believe.
Really?
Or Oscar nominated. It definitely was nominated for stuff. It probably won some stuff as well. Oh, I don't think I've actually ever seen it.
Yeah, that was just to set the scene. Because this movie is from 2006, which kind of...
Yeah, and I would say it does look a bit dated.
Yeah, it does.
Like, the characters themselves, like the animals, look pretty good.
The humans always look weird.
The humans look very weird. Like, their skin is very pasty. There's, like, a lack of detail there. And I get that, obviously, they're sort of stylized. But there's just, I think, like, there's something about the animation where they look a bit... They look a bit rigid, a bit fluid. Not fluid. They kind of... And there's something about... Like, when they're in the... Basically, the idea is that their whole sort of forest area has been reduced to a small section, and this hedge has come up, and then beyond the hedge is suburbia has just arrived in 5 months. And, like, the suburbia looks, like, very low detail. Like, I get that, obviously, like, it's meant to look, like, repetitive and kind of stale and that sort of stuff, but I do think there is a kind of... Everything has that kind of... like, brand new, like, too real, too new kind of quality to it. Like, the thing that, with CGI, that makes things look real is when you add, like, imperfections to them.
Yeah.
And I think, like, a lot of that is, it just doesn't have that quite level of detail in it. Like, I watched some behind-the-scenes thing about it, and they were talking about how, like, oh, you know, we've got, like, great hair in this movie. Like, the hair tech has really come along. Like, characters interact with each other, and the hair moves when they interact with each other. I thought, yeah, that's fine, but, like, because this would have been... What year did Monsters, Inc. come out?
That is a good question. I don't know.
Because Monsters, Inc. like really prided itself on their sort of hair technology and way that moves. And I would say, like, this is lacking that.
2001,
yeah. So Pixar killing it, way ahead of the game. Also, this is a post-Trek movie. I think it's... To me, it feels like it's a 2006 movie, and it's post all these other movies that were a lot bigger than it and actually had a bit more... That overall seemed to have a higher quality bar. I'm not really sure what that means necessarily. Like,
maybe they had more money.
Well, yeah, but I mean, like, maybe it's just like attention to detail thing or something like that. Or maybe it is just to do with like the environments and how they were kind of chosen and stuff like that. But it just... There's something about it that I think like is just lacking.
Do you think they spent all their money on their cast?
Well, maybe not all the money, but they spent a fair chunk. Apparently, I think this cost about $80 million to make, and made about 300. I might be confusing this with something else, because I did watch something else about...
So these are just some numbers that are in your brain?
Yeah, just some numbers in my brain. They might be right, they might be wrong. But, yeah, well, I just feel... Just
say them, then.
Yeah, that's fine. yeah, I feel like it's... Like, it looks okay. Yeah. It looks fine.
It's fine.
I think, like, now you would almost class it as, like, a made-for-TV movie.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, it doesn't feel, like, special. It doesn't feel like it's an event.
It definitely, of the other films that came out in 2006, it's...
Which were all very animal-heavy.
There's nothing about it that, like, elevates it above the other ones. However, there was plans for there to be a sequel.
Yeah.
A lot of names were attached to the sequel.
Oh, really?
It never materialised, but the names attached were...
Go on.
Chris Brown.
Oh, yeah.
Kanye West.
Right.
Ludacris.
Right. Big in the hip-hop scene, is that?
Yeah. Adam Sandler. Tom Hanks.
Okay.
Lil Wayne. Mila Kunis. And Hilary Duff.
Wow, they were going big in the music, weren't they?
Yeah.
Why?
They didn't mention any of the original cast, including Avril.
Avril Lavigne, like, they got Avril, and they were like, Avril really, like, she was a big number mover for us on this movie, so if we lean heavily into music industry, that's a surefire winner.
Well, you know a lot about Avril Lavigne, so can you tell me what else she was doing in 2006?
This is prior to Lyme disease, so...
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Lyme disease is weird, isn't it? Because, like, you can catch it and then maybe the symptoms...
I think it's one of those things, as far as I know, it's, like, it's unclear whether you can cure it, and it seems to, like, recur in some people, even though it has been, quote-unquote, cured.
Okay.
This is prior to her going away for a long time. Like, this is her kind of, maybe, like, second album
She was in her early 20s.
And end of second album, sort of going to third album, maybe.
Do you think she would have been, at the time, like a big selling point for this movie?
I seem to remember her being a big selling point. Maybe that's just because I remember Avril Lavigne.
I feel like, yeah. I'm not sure your perspective should be trusted because...
like you it's the only thing I remember about this movie. So yeah, definitely shouldn't be trusted. I didn't know I had Steve Carell in it. It took me ages to work out that Steve Carell was the squirrel. But like, it does have like... this is definitely one of those movies that leans on having celebs to draw in. Like having stars to draw in as the cast. So yeah, you've got Bruce Willis, you've got Steve Carell... Both would have been, like, really big at the time.
Yeah.
And then you've got Avril Lavigne.
Can I just tell you, before we abandon Avril Lavigne entirely...
Sure, sure.
Never
happening.
Never She will come back again.
She's recording a new album right now.
Is she? Oh.
Yeah, with Molson.
I do have a fact that I would just like to read to you.
Yeah.
That I think is indicative of either Avril Lavigne's massive star power in 2006 or... Canada's lack of major stars, because the fact is that in August 2006, Canadian Business Magazine ranked her as the 7th top Canadian actor in Hollywood.
Actor in Hollywood? Because she was in this one movie?
She was in two movies. She was in another movie before this that was a very low-budget movie that was never released in America.
Oh, really?
I can't remember what the title of it was, but I only discovered it after looking up Avril Lavigne in this movie.
Wow, that's very...
And they were, like, asking her... you know, what's next for you in movies? And she's like, I'm going to be really selective with my roles. It's like,
yeah, and she has selected none. That's how selective she was. She has selected none. Other than this movie, she's in like Fast Food Nation.
Yeah.
Like, I remember her being in that for all of like 2 seconds.
She's in another sort of, I feel like, teen TV show where she's essentially just playing herself.
Sure, yeah, I can imagine that being happening all the time, but.
Yeah.
Okay, should we move on from Avril?
We can move on. Here's another question for you, Paul.
Mm-hmm.
What do you reckon is the degree of separation between this movie and former President Donald Trump?
Oh my god, I don't even want to know the answer to that.
Shall I just tell you?
Yeah, just tell me.
Okay, do you remember the dog chase scene? There are two very minor human characters who are like... in the gardens as they run through.
Vaguely.
There were some minor human characters that only appeared for a moment. Those characters were voiced by Lee Bienstock.
Right.
And Sean Yazbek.
Oh, I know what you're going to say now.
Yeah.
They were on The Apprentice and they won, like... they won, like... To be in this movie, to have a minor role in this movie.
Yeah, as a result for winning a task on The Apprentice.
Wow.
So there you go. That's brilliant. The degree of separation.
That's like one.
One.
Brilliant. Okay.
The only thing left on my list of things to talk about that didn't come up naturally was that I looked up a New York Times review of the movie when it came out, just for... Shits and Giggles.
Yeah.
And there was a very scathing New York Times review.
Oh, really?
Which I thought was really unfair.
I mean, when I was looking, it seemed to... Like, IMDb is, like, generally positive
it's
reviews.
It's fine. It's fine.
It's like, it's a good, fun movie. It's fine.
What the New York Times chose to say about it was, there is no poetry here and little thought. That's particularly too bad, since the recent alligator attacks in Florida prove that the story of human encroachment on animal turf is topical and rich in thematic possibility. To which I have written, are you insane? Did this New York Times writer want to write a children's movie about alligator attacks in Florida? What would that movie even look like?
It would look like Lake Placid. That's exactly what it would look like.
For children.
Yeah, Lake Placid for kids.
Yeah, so that I thought that was particularly unfair. Like, don't get me wrong, this is not... Of the movies we watch, this is... Very much not the best.
Yeah, it is. Like, the setup of the movie, it's like the story is very simple. It's very clean cut. You know exactly where it's going. I'd say that's probably its like the biggest weakness is like the story is very predictable. But it's got a little bit of charm to it, and it kind of you feel like it does miss opportunities. Like the whole you know, suburbia encroaching on wildlife and, you know, the environmental impact, stuff like that. It makes no remarks on those whatsoever.
Not really.
That's what I'm saying. It doesn't bring up any of that stuff.
Now that I think about it. No,
and I feel like those are missed opportunities. Because as I said to you before we started recording properly, I wrote down one of my notes is this satire? Because, I don't know if you know this, I wrote this down, but this movie is actually based on a comic strip.
Yeah.
Which I've never read.
No, me neither.
And there was something to do with the rights of it were originally with like Katzenberg, and then he took them to DreamWorks.
Katzenberger again? You told me who.
Yeah, so this is a whole Disney thing as well. So Jeffrey Katzenberg used to be at Disney with Michael Eisner, and then they had a falling out. So
basically, that's when Katzenberg went off on his own and founded
DreamWorks with what's his face?
I don't know.
David Geffen and Spielberg.
Okay.
Like, big name people. Like, we're not fucking around here. So Spielberg, Geffen, and Katzenberg started DreamWorks, and then this was one of the rights that he'd snapped up or something like that early on, and so they took it to DreamWorks, and then he got greenlit as a movie. So I know Katzenberg also founded Quibi, which died a death massively in 2020.
Is that quite recent?
Yeah.
But what was it set up quite recently, or was it around for a long time?
it was set up and died in the space of 2020.
That's what I was wondering.
Yeah.
I wondered if it was one of those things that have like existed for a long time, but very limited field of knowledge.
Don't worry about Quibi. Just ignore it.
Don't worry about it. I wasn't particularly worried.
It never happened. So I wrote, is this satire? Because, and it seems like when I watch some behind the scenes stuff, that some of these sort of gags in the movie are lifted straight from the comic panels. It was kind of like a, you know, comic strip rather than a comic book. And
like a gag a day.
Yeah. And they, because some of the commentary, a lot of the commentary is the animals commenting on the human behaviours.
Right.
And so when they start off, near the start of the movie, where RJ is introducing all the animals to, like, oh, these are all the humans, their lives revolve around food. And he's talking about how, you know, this is the thing to heat the food. Yeah. This is the thing to cool the food. This is the thing that brings them food. This is the thing that, like, their whole lives revolve around food. This is the machine so they can exercise. They don't feel bad about eating the food. And then this, you know, and like, I was like, oh, this is quite like on the nose stuff. Yeah. And then there's, they're going past like an RV, and he's explaining it to this. He's like, this is the, he says, humans are slowly losing their ability to walk. So this is how they get around. And they're all like, whoa, how many people travel in this? It's this giant SUV. And he's like, usually one. And like, all of that is still very on the nose and still very pertinent, like all these years later. And it feels like they do that and they kind of drop it. Like it's a, you know, like a lot, you know, they could have played more with that sort of comedy and they don't. They kind of use it, those jokes, a few times, which, like I say, I feel like are lifted straight from the comic strip, and then the rest of it, they kind of rely on other sort of slapstick and other stuff there. Because at one point, it just turns into a heist movie. Like, the final act of the movie is them going into the house and stealing all the goods to make up, like, all the week's worth of goods that they've taken in one night. Like, that's the premise. And so, yeah, so this movie then just turns into a heist movie, and there's a little sort of homage to two things. I would say it would be like Mission Impossible, where he drops, Hammy drops down on a rope and nearly gets zapped by a laser, and then a bit of a Matrix influence, maybe, where right at the end, sort of Hammy the hamster gets fed some sugary energy drink and basically time stops. It's like there was no like foreshadowing of this or anything like that. It's just
there was. Previously, I noticed this because there's a. Apparently, I was trying to catch a sight of the can that he drinks from, because it's a high caffeine energy drink, and apparently somewhere on it says nearly juice, which was a comment on the FDA approval that you can call something fruit juice if it contains like 10% of real fruit.
Okay, yeah.
So I was looking out for that, but there is like some point where Bruce Willis's character stops Hammy the hamster from drinking the caffeine, because he's like, oh, there's one thing you don't need is caffeine.
Okay, so it's kind of set
later
up. Okay,
yeah, there's a
all right, so there is a setup and payoff. Okay, fine.
There were two other like big illusions you may have noticed. One of them was Rosebud.
Yes.
Yeah.
They do say Rosebud.
But also...
Stella.
And Stella. Yeah, I'd forgotten about that one.
Stella! But also, I don't know what that's from, but you told me.
It's Streetcar Named Desire.
Okay.
Which I learned quite late on in life is not a musical.
Okay.
The Simpsons does an episode where they do Streetcar Named Desire as a musical.
Oh, okay. I've never seen Streetcar Named Desire, so I have no context.
Because of The Simpsons, I also thought that the musical Guys and Dolls contained a song that went,
Guys and Dolls!
Or just the one talker saying, Guys and Dolls!
Sadly not. Okay.
But there was another allusion to our friend, Mr. Indiana Jones,
mm-hmm.
in the beginning, where RJ, the raccoon, steals a tube of what are essentially Pringles from the bear and replaces them very quickly with something else.
Yeah, this is a movie that does have a fair few callbacks and references to other stuff, which I guess are meant for adults. Because like this would be totally lost on a kid, right? Like no kids are gonna get like a Stella reference.
This is the thing. This is what Shrek did so well. It had so many jokes that worked on so many different levels, and I think. Did you say that this movie was post-Shrek?
Yes, yeah, post-Shrek. Because it was advertised as, like, from the studio that brought you Shrek.
Ah, that's interesting. Yeah, so I feel like it was definitely influenced by that. I was trying to do the same thing.
Yeah, quite possibly. Just coming back to the knockoff Pringles, because they make quite a few, like... I was going to say points, but...
Please, can I tell you something?
Sure.
In the original trailer for this movie, there's a shot that features the Pringles, and they're called Jingles.
Right.
In the trailer. They're not called that in the movie.
No, they're called Spuds.
They're called like Spuddies or something.
Spuddies, yeah.
And they say whoever owns Pringles was not happy about that.
Clearly, yeah, because it does, because they're set up right from the start, aren't they? It's like the one thing. So RJ has stolen everything from the bear except for a can of knockoff Pringles that he's got, the bear has got in his hands. So he steals that can of knockoff Pringles, even though he's got everything.
Yeah.
And that's what then sets off everything, and like the bear comes after him and stuff. And then that happens again and again. We see that right in the final when they've managed to steal everything in one night for a whole week's, you know, for everything they've been stealing over the week to replace it. And there was that one can of Spuddies again, and he's going for it, and it just leads to catastrophe again. And then they even have like a knockoff Pringles catchphrase of like, I can't remember what it is, but it's like something similar to evocative of "Once you pop, you can't stop" sort of thing, which I thought was very funny.
Well, they kept that, but clearly I've just looked it up and it's Kellogg's own Pringles and they were not having it.
Right, okay.
I would love to have been in the room for that conversation where they were like, you may not call your knockoff Chris Brand Pringles.
Yeah. Okay, can I take you through some of my random notes that I made?
Yeah, might as well.
Okay, so... when the foraging animals awake from hibernation and they're talking about, you know, getting all their start collecting food for the next year, etc., and RJ turns up and he's like, oh, don't do that, blah blah blah, and he opens a bag of like, I guess what are Watsits knockoffs as well, like this orange
cheese flavored nachos.
So he opens this nacho flavor thing and it just like all the dust, all the flavoured dust just, like, explodes all over them. And then you see that shot from, like, space. And there are quite a few, like, shots from space of, like, this tiny little town that just seem to... Everything just has, like, you know, this classic shot from space to see an explosion.
Yeah.
And you see it with this... The first one you see is with this packet of nachos.
Right.
And again, this is why I wrote down, like, is this satire? Because, like... They all try like this nacho stuff, and then the next day when they're like eating, like trying to eat like regular stuff, they're just like, oh no, we can't. We need the junk food now.
Yeah.
Like they just become obsessed with junk food, and there's no sort of commentary on that either, which I feel like, again, this movie has so many missed opportunities for like good like jokes and commentary on stuff, and just doesn't take it.
Mother Porcupine says to her children, eat up, kids. Something that tastes this good can't be bad for you. Which I feel is, like, lifted straight from the sort of 1950s. Like, when they invented all of these weird, like cornflakes, I guess, and all these kinds of foods that were, like, efficient, but not nutritious.
Yeah. Another thing I wrote down. So, Vern, the turtle.
Yeah.
When he first meets RJ, he talks about, like, his tail tingling. And, like, that's a bad sign. Like, if his tail's tingling, that means, like, something's amiss or whatever.
Yeah.
And then the whole thing with Vern is that he loses his shell constantly.
Yeah.
Like, he's always
would
falling
out
of his shell.
Would that kill a turtle in real life?
Yes, it would. They're attached to their shells. so
that's really upsetting.
But there is a scene where Vern loses his shell and you see his butt. But you don't see a tail.
Oh, Paul, you found a plot hole.
It's not a plot hole. It's just a continuity sort of thing. Like, he has no tail. You never see his tail.
Oh, no.
He's not talking about his tail tingling, but he never has one. The whole thing is a lie.
We need to write a letter.
I think it's a bit late for that. The other thing I wrote down were the songs are very forgettable. Like, it doesn't have...
Oh.
Well, okay, except for one, I'll excuse, but I'll come back to that. So, again, this behind-the-scenes thing I watched, there's quite some big names behind this. So there's Hans Zimmer, but he was, like, an exec, like, music producer. He didn't actually, like, write the score. There was another composer whose name I've forgotten. And then there was Ben Folds.
Yeah.
They brought on board. And Ben Folds, like, has some sort of notoriety, but this is why I say, this is of the movies we've watched so far, this feels like the most trying to be a Disney movie, because it feels like they wanted Ben Folds to be like what Randy Newman is to Toy Story.
Yeah.
To write songs that was just so iconic, so emblematic, and what we get instead is Rockin' the Suburbs, which is a banger, but is not like... Like, I don't think that song was written for this specifically. Which...
No, it was not.
Exactly, but that's what I mean. So you got that, and you got Lost in the Supermarket. Both of those songs, not written for this movie, but are used like in this movie. And then the songs that are written for this movie are just like so the and forgettable, and they're so on the nose as well. They're like you'll like see like this movie has no subtlety. Like you'll see him. There's like a scene where RJ is feeling bad about the fact that he's going to con them and that he's going to steal all the food to give to the bear. But they're all setting him up as really nice and like, oh, we've just had like a bit of family bonding time. And there's this whole song of like, you know, whatever, like Scoundrel Among Us.
Yeah.
And it's just like, what? There's no subtlety to this.
Can I tell
whatsoever.
You something else about that song?
Go on.
When Ben Folds originally wrote it and performed it to the, I guess, the movie executives.
Yeah.
And the first line of the song was, "I'm an asshole." Which did not stick around.
Yeah, surprisingly. Yeah, this movie has no subtlety in the songwriting whatsoever.
What would you say is a subtle animated movie, though?
Well, I'm not like any of the Toy Stories better than this. Like, it's not necessarily like
they're not subtle, though, are they?
Well, no, but they're not banging you around the head either. Like, you know, there's some elegance to it at least, and not some ham-fisted. Like, this movie just feels like it's trying too hard, I would say.
I don't know. I feel like that's all perception. Like,
maybe.
I think if you watch these movies in a vacuum, which we can't because we're very much in not in a vacuum, I don't think you would... I mean, granted, I think that Toy Story is better, but I think a lot of that is to do with, like, nostalgia and looking back at how much we love it.
Yeah, maybe.
I think if you watch Toy Story as well and you, like...
Well, that's the thing. I think if this movie had come out in, like... the 90s, like the same year as Toy Story or something like that, it would have held up a lot better. But because it came like 10 years after, it just feels like it is a bit like it's fine, like
yeah,
it's totally fine.
It's just happened. I think timing has a lot to do with it, because it was just part of this glut of like animated movies that
were all involved talking animals.
All involved talking animals.
All came out in 2006.
All came out in 2006.
Yeah,
they were just all the same kind of a thing. So like necessarily, we're going to be forgettable.
Mm-hmm. A couple of other things I noted. The dog chase sequence is great, as I mentioned. The skunk gets a makeover as a sexy cat.
Yeah, that was a bit weird.
That was a bit
weird,
yeah.
It was Wanda Sykes doing the voice of the skunk.
Wanda Sykes doing the voice of the skunk. Amajilili Lily doing the voice of the cat.
Yeah.
That can't smell.
That can't smell.
Which is fine to then have a relationship with the skunk, apparently.
Mm, yeah, it doesn't feel good.
I'm not really sure what that was about. So yeah, that's when the movie turns into like a heist movie, and the whole thing is like basically distract the guard. So Amajilili, the cat, has the collar that will allow them to get into the house. So the whole thing is that Skunk Wanda has to distract the cat. Seduce him, yeah. And so they just end up having a conversation.
So actually, looking at this movie from a feminist perspective, which I will do, because we've not been picky enough thus far, the two roles for women in this movie are literally... Oh no, actually, there's Avril Lavigne's character as well. She's a teenage girl, but also mother porcupine and seductive skunk. And that's just the...
That's all you got.
That's the, what do they call, virgin slash whore dichotomy.
Oh, so they?
Yeah, they do.
Oh.
So not great for ladies.
No. And Avril Possum gets kicked at a wall, I wrote.
She does. Absolutely that was really punted.
So Alison Janney's character, who is like the homeowners association woman that lives in the house that they're stealing all the food from, in the final night when they're like trying to keep watch on her, Avril Lavigne
possum,
yeah, like is crawling up the stairs and she just screams, Alison Janney's character, and just punts her straight at the wall, absolutely splat. And it's great. That's a great little moment.
I liked it.
It was very
every part of that was surprising. Executed perfectly. The noise, the yell, the very limp body of Avril Lavigne's possum.
Yeah.
A plus. Very good.
Yeah. Yeah, I think this movie is fine. It's decent enough. Like, if you're like, if you're really starving for something to watch, like, it's okay to watch. I wouldn't run out and watch it.
No.
If you want to get in touch with us, you can at Not Disney Movie on Twitter and message us, tell us what else you want us to watch, and we will see you next week where it will be my choice. And that's it. See you, love you, bye.
See you, love you, bye. Can I tell you something else that we're gonna cut?
Sure.
Yesterday when I fell, I think I sprained my butt cheek. Really?
Yeah, I sprained your glute.
My glute.
Your glute.
Really hurt. It's just considering that I only ran for like half a mile before I fell down. Like, I know that's not like a strain from work running too hard. Like, I must have fallen in such a way that I overexerted my butt.
Oh dear.
I just wanted to tell you.
That's fine.